Hello and welcome back to the Brian Hughes Podcast. So grateful that you're here with us today. If you didn't get a chance to catch our first episode, episode zero, the pilot, whatever we called it, you should check that out because we really sort of laid out what this podcast is going to be, why we're doing this, and I think it'll be just really valuable information for you as we go. Just a reminder, share this thing with your friends, share it with people you love, put it on social media. Of course, we're really trying to grow it. We think there's a lot of value here. So if you would do that, it's a huge help to us. And we would love for more and more people to be able to just sort of have conversations with us. But Brian, how you doing?
I feel great.
Good.
I feel great.
Good. We are going to sort of begin our first, what you might call, series of this podcast by taking a look at what's been happening this summer at PCC.
Yep.
So for a long time, we did follow-up videos to the messages that we would make for small groups and things like that. And we would sort of get to some things that we just didn't have enough time for on a Sunday. Because as we said in the previous episode, you only got but so much time to speak. And of course, all of these stories are a lot more complicated and have a lot more to tell us than we can get to in 28 minutes or whatever it is. So we're going to do a little bit of that for this first series with this Into the Wild summer series that we're doing at PCC. If you don't know, we're taking a look at various different people and stories from the Bible that have to deal with the wild or the wilderness. People like John the Baptist, Moses, David, Jesus himself, who all spent some time in the wilderness and had a profound experience with God as a part of it. So we're going to start with the first person I just named, John the Baptist, who at this point, at this time of recording, we've actually had the pleasure of hearing Angie speak on him a little bit. And I bring her up specifically because I want to get to that just before we get to John himself. Because in our last episode, you were just talking about really caring about communication and why it matters and why it's important that we do this well. And Angie, at least for my money, I think it's true for a lot of people around here, has really been able to communicate what you've given her, what she feels like God is calling her to, in an incredibly effective way for really a long time here at PCC. So, you know, Angie, if you're listening, we're going to do a little bit of boosting to you. I hope you're cool with that. But Brian, why don't you just talk about Angie and sort of your professional relationship with her, your sort of mentor of her, and why you saw in her the ability to do what she can do.
Okay. Well, let's take, if I could, let's take a little bit of a further step back and talk about why I'm building a teaching team. Then I'll come back to Angie and heck, we might make it to John the Baptist. I don't know. Anyway, but so what I'm about to say is not intended to be my view of right and wrong in the church world or a prescription to the only way to do it. But when we started our church, I knew that the beginning of it and for a while that the when you plant a church that it would be about it would be centered around you. That's just a necessary product.
Right.
When you're a church planter. I had a choice to make at one point where I got to decide, am I going to make the future of the church hinge on me and my personality, or am I going to disperse authority and presence around the church? And I, when you're a church planner, you get to decide these things. There are churches that are huge and thriving and reaching all kinds of people who are built around a personality.
Yeah.
And a lot of us look at those churches, and maybe some of our listeners can think of some of them now, and we think to ourselves, when that guy's gone, what's that church going to look
like? Yeah.
And I just decided, for me, I just decided, both for my own ego check and for the longevity and legacy of the church, I didn't want to do that. So a few years ago, I decided, and by the way, John the Baptist has this statement at one point in his ministry where people are asking him about to compare his ministry with Jesus, and he said, he must get greater and I must get lesser.
Yeah,
And so I love that. And so anyway, I decided a few years ago, many years ago actually, that I there was nothing that kept me from preaching 52 Sundays a year or 50 take 2 weeks off for vacation, but I just decided I want to make sure that we have a platform that has both diversity on it and all compelling communicators at varying skill levels that over time would all be growing in their skill, but be excellent communicators teaching truth from the Bible in a relevant way, and that at some point, if something happened to me, or if I was, or you know, and, I mean, nobody lives forever. When I retire, or whatever that is, that the church already has a matrix of communicators that knew how to do this well, and I would train them, and I would pour into them, and I want them to find their own voice. But also, there's a method to the madness here, and I can teach them how to do that kind of thing. Now, so we just did that, and I love our teaching team. There's 6 people, including me, on the teaching team. And it has really been a benefit to our church. There's diversity because there's men and women. We have people. We're not all just white people on it. I wanted all of the diversity we could get. We have younger people and older people, and I wanted that kind of diversity because when people come to church and they look on the platform, if they don't see some version of themselves, they'll think this church is not for me.
Yeah.
Yep. So we really are building something that I'm proud of in that way. To Angie, when I was pastoring a small country church, it's the only other church I've ever been a pastor of. I went there when I was 28 years old, and I didn't know anything, but I had a lot of energy and a lot of charisma to just, you know, I would just tackle a hill. I had no idea what I was doing.
Will the thing.
Just will the thing. Mm-hmm. You just smile and just go for it.
Yeah.
And so the first staff person I ever hired anywhere at any time ever was Angie. Hmm. And she was, she might still have been a teenager, I guess. She had just graduated from high school, I guess. And I invited her to be the summer youth intern. She worked for me for 3 months at that other church. We had virtually no youth ministry, and her job was to go build it. And what Angie displayed then was a vast amount of tenacity. We even did this event one time. She organized this event, poured all her heart and soul into it, and no one showed up. Mm. And she cried and then willed the thing into existence. She was just determined it was not going to beat her.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we had the largest student ministry in the county because she just decided, I'm not going to lose.
Yeah.
So that kind of tenacity, you know, we endeared me to her. And so when we planted PCC, her and her family were a part of that. And pretty quickly, I hired her here at our church to be on the team. Now, at first, she was not, I wasn't doing a teaching team. But when I developed the teaching team, I thought, first of all, we need a female voice here. Now, Elijah, we could have some conversation at some point. It'd probably be worthwhile to have a whole podcast about women in ministry and women with authority. And there's this whole debate in the church. Many of our listeners right now have got to be thinking, you are kidding me. I mean, are you serious? Oh, yes, I am super serious. As a matter of fact, there is a great deal of controversy and finger-pointing in the church. There are churches that see us as completely illegitimate because we have a woman who's a pastor. Mm. And we have more than one, by the way.
Right.
We've ordained them. I believe that women can serve in any level of leadership, and I think I can make a strong case from that from the Bible.
Right.
But there are other people who see the Bible very differently, and they also make a strong case from the Bible. And in both cases, we're just trying to act with integrity. I don't think they're evil. I hope they don't feel that way about me. I said to Angie, I need you on this team. Now, you mentioned earlier, if Angie's listening, Angie's heard this before, so this, if anybody feels bad about what I'm about to say, you don't have to feel bad for Angie. She knows it already. Angie's first messages, people would come up to me and they'd be like, what are you doing? What are you thinking?
It's just so hard to imagine now. You know?
It is hard to imagine.
Yeah.
But she was timid. She was stiff as a board. You were anxious for her.
Right. Yeah.
And so people would say to me, what are you thinking? And I just kept saying, it's in there. The only way to get it out is you just got to let me keep working with her. Well, now, I mean, you fast forward, and there's a whole big, long story in the middle of that. You fast forward to today, and she's one of the most effective communicators I know. And so, you know, of course, we always want to teach the Bible. I'll be honest with you. Teaching the Bible itself, the foundational principles of the Bible, usually that's the easy part.
Right.
The harder part is communicating it in such a way that keeps people's attention long enough to actually hear the truth that you're trying to communicate from the Bible.
Right.
And structuring a message in such a way and using inflection and all the things. And Angie is just really, really good. I'm so proud of her. And she now, you know, she's got a following and people want to listen to her. And so, and that is the story many times of a communicator, right? They start, none of us start out well. I've got early stuff that I hope no one ever, thank God social media did not exist when I started preaching, because somebody would dig that stuff up and I'd be like, please, it was not me. It was AI me. So yeah, that's Angie. I've loved working with Angie. She's really coming to her own as a leader and a communicator. She now helps lead the whole church with me, and and it's just such a thing of beauty. We went through a hard time a long time ago. There was some conflict. That's just normal. It's just part and parcel to doing life together and doing ministry together. Right. And so anytime you're in a long relationship with somebody, you're going to have some conflict. The question is not, will it come? The question is, how are you going to work through it when it comes?
Yes.
And Angie and I proved that we could work through difficult days together, that we could stay committed to the cause, that we could stay committed to our friendship. And man, it has just been powerful.
Yeah,
it's just been powerful.
Absolutely. I wasn't there at the first church you mentioned, but I was one of her students for a little bit while she was in student ministry here, and I can attest to all that. And she's the one who gave us a really powerful message on John the Baptist, sort of for the first week of our Into the Wild series. So we won't do the whole preamble for the whole teaching team. Most of the teaching team is teaching during the series, but you know, Angie, she is deserving.
Yep.
She's been doing it a while. So anyway, so let's get into John the Baptist.
All right.
So John the Baptist is a guy who plays a major role sort of in the coming of and the preparing the way for Jesus and his ministry on earth. And I know you're going to, of course, talk a little bit about this, but one of the things that fascinates me a lot about John the Baptist is he, with any account that we have of him, which is in all of the Gospels, which is even still pretty rare for, I mean, there are only a handful of stories that find their way into Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
That's right.
You know, so the fact that he makes an appearance there speaks to his importance. But one of the things I've always found fascinating about him was, at least on paper, with what we have, he really never seemed to waver from what he was called to do. And there never really even seemed to be a question that he was going to fill this role and fill the role well, which in his own words was very much a secondary role, which I think is just a huge testament to him. So we're just going to spend some time just having some conversation about John the Baptist and sort of how the wilderness defined him and all of that. So why don't you speak a little bit on some observations you have about him and we can have some conversation back and forth about it.
I think what I wanted to make sure that we did when we dial into what happens on Sunday here, which we're not always going to do. I don't want to re-preach somebody else's message. They're excellent. Every listener, whether you're part of our church or not, you ought to go back and listen to that message. It was potent, has practical application for our lives. But the piece that I wanted to dial in on specifically relative to John had to do with calling. And one of the things that I really love to do is help people sort of find where the rubber meets the road. I'm not an academic. I really don't want to spend my time in philosophical conversations. I want to know, how do I make my life better?
Right.
And for me, that means more like God wants me to live. And I think that most people live in that space too. How does my life improve? And if you can't give me, if the information isn't helping me learn in some way and connect those dots, then it becomes unhelpful unless it is purely entertainment. So I like watching movies and I'm not really looking for life application. In fact, I'm looking for checking out.
Right.
That's really
you want
what I'm
the
trying.
Brain to just be completely
just
off.
Completely shut my life down, shut my brain down. Let me just go somewhere else. Other than that though, I'm looking for application. So for John, and Angie barely touched on this, but Angie really focused on the what does it mean to prepare the way for other people.
Right.
And I really found that to be powerful. I learned some things. But what I wanted to do as far as a complement to that is to talk about the notion of calling. The part of why John never wavered is because he could look back and see clearly that God had mapped his life out for this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes all the way back to, you mentioned John is in all four of the Gospels, the four accounts of the story of Jesus. If you think about how important or how what a powerful message that is that John gets included, the Christmas narrative is not included
right.
in all four Gospels. It's only mentioned in Matthew and Luke.
Yeah.
And the parable of the prodigal son is only found in John. The disciple, not the Baptist, not the baptizer. But John the baptizer shows up in all four Gospels. It just is an indication of how important he is. And in Luke's account, we get the story of how John gets born to Elizabeth and Zechariah, his dad. And so an angel appears. I won't belabor this, but this is in Luke chapter 1. An angel appears to Zechariah. He's got this religious duty. And an angel appears to him and says, your wife is going to have this son. And she really is not supposed to be able to have children, and she's going to have this son. And in verse 17, the angel says to Zechariah, he, meaning your son, the angel's already said, you got to name him John. So your son John will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah, who is a prophet before him, not Elijah, my colleague, but Elijah the prophet, to turn the hearts of the parents to their children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord, which is what Angie talked about. But I wanted to talk about the calling piece. So you can imagine that if Zechariah encounters this angel, and this angel says, hey, man, your wife's going to have a son. I'm giving you his name. So most parents, we enjoy, sometimes argue over what we're going to name our kids, blah, blah. This was never a question for Zechariah and Elizabeth. The angel says that you're going to name him John, and this is going to be the story of his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So John is born. He's just a baby. Like, what does he know? And then at some point, when he can begin to understand, they start telling him, hey, let me tell you what your life is about. Let me tell you what your life is about. And they'll tell him the story. He will have heard the story of the angel appearing and all the things. By the time he's of age, it's sort of, he knows. There's no question in his mind. There's not a journey of discovery of calling, which is what most of us have to do. It's just clear as day for him all along. So, you know, we hear a story like that and we say, well, of course. If somebody could just tell me that my parents had a vision from an angel and paint the story of my life, I'll follow it too.
Sure.
And that's not true for most of us,
right.
except most of us we can look back and see a series of indicators about where our life is supposed to be purposed, if I can use that as a verb. John had this specific story. The rest of us have smaller stories, but they're still there.
Right.
So I wanted to talk about how this has worked for me. When I was discovering my own calling, it was 1997. I know that dates me. And I was taking this course. I was new in adult faith. I really was trying to figure out what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus and what's my life supposed to be about, like many people. And I was taking this course called Experiencing God, Knowing and Doing the Will of God, which was written by a guy named Henry Blackaby, and it's still available. People can still do it. It's super hard, but I was digging into it. And Blackaby says there are several components of it, but one of the things that Blackaby says is if you look back on your life, he says there are times when you will have had these encounters with God. And he compares it to times in the Bible when people encountered God, like when Moses encounters God at the burning bush and other places.
Right.
And when Jacob wrestles with God. And there are these moments where these people encounter God and they build an altar. They often build this monument. And the reason that they do that, like when the Israelites cross the Jordan River, they build a monument. The reason that they do that is because they can come back to this place and say, we encountered God in a special way here. And that encounter is part of the sort of the pathway to understanding what is my purpose. So Blackaby says, if you'll go back and you'll do an inventory of your spiritual markers, you will find that they line up and point your life in a particular direction. So I sit down and I start writing down and really going through this exercise of how have I encountered God?
Right. Where are my altars?
And where are my altars? And they're not always like, people are looking for like, you know, God spoke to me in the burning bush. You know, that's probably not going to happen to you. But like, for example, with me, my grandparents would tell this story. I've heard it many, many times. When I was just a little kid, I'd be like 4 or 5 years old. Some stranger would come to the door. I would go answer the door. I didn't know who it was. I would take them by the hand. I would take them in the other room. I would put a record on. I would begin to talk to them. I would tell them stories. When I was like 7 or 8 years old, my dad's neighbors still talk about this. When I was 7 or 8 years old, I would go on Sunday mornings. My parents didn't go to church. On Sunday mornings, I would go outside with the only Bible that I had. I would climb the swing set, stand on top, and preach a sermon. I would preach. The grass was my congregation. Nice. There were thousands of them. I only knew one piece of scripture, Psalm 37:4. Preach the same sermon every week. And when I go back and visit my dad, the neighbors still talk about that. And there are other pieces of this I could name, where when I started to say, how there was something significant about this. God seemed to be working in this way. They all lined up and said, so even today, when I get distracted and I think, gosh, I'd like to do some of this and I'd like to do some of that. And there are lots of things I'd like to do, but I know what I'm called to do.
Yeah.
And that helps keep me focused. And I think that, so Blackaby says, you got to do the spiritual markers exercise. And I think for many of us, there's a greater sense of calling that we just have not discovered, but it is out there. And there are other components to discovering of calling, which include, Blackaby talks about there are ways that we know God is speaking. In fact, that's the whole underscore of the book is how to know and do the will of God. And so he says, God primarily speaks in four ways. He says the Holy Spirit speaks primarily through the Bible, prayer, circumstances, and the church to reveal himself, his purposes, and his ways. That's a quote, by the way. And so he says these four things, through the Bible, prayer, circumstances, and the church. And he says, God never contradicts himself. So he doesn't always speak to you the same message in all four ways, but usually at least two, sometimes three, and occasionally all four. And so every time I have questioned, what does God want me to do? I have employed this tool and said, I'm going to search for God's voice in the scriptures. I'm going to search for God's voice through prayer. I'm going to evaluate my circumstances, which is to say, I'm going to go back and look at more of those spiritual markers. And I'm going to ask people around me, what we would call the church. I'm going to say, I'm asking you to pray and see if you can confirm for me that God is leading my life in this particular direction.
Yeah.
Every time I have had a critical decision to make about the future of my life and have employed those tools, I have been able to discover God's next step for me.
Yeah.
And I think you got John the Baptist who completely is able to live out his life calling because there was never a question in his mind of what is God's purpose for me.
Right. Right. No, that's amazing. I'm over here learning, just writing stuff down. No, I think it's such a good point. And I think it's important to remember too, when you're reading the Bible, that, you know, all of it is written with the benefit of hindsight.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so, you know, Luke, for example, he says right at the sort of the very beginning that like, I'm getting eyewitness testimonies.
That's right.
Basically. And so, you know, how much interaction did he actually have with this? But he's got a whole bunch of people, whole pile of people who are testifying sort of on behalf of John. We watched him do this.
That's right.
And it's all he ever did.
That's right.
You know? And so then you start to, of course, it's not to suggest that everything that the angels and his parents didn't happen, because of course it did, but it's easy to see now talking about looking back over your life. These people can look back at the arc of John's life, which of course ends tragically, if you know
that's
the
right.
story, but
that's right.
And be like, well, yeah, that's what he was doing, and it's what he did for the majority of it. And so, like, to your point, just being able to take that look back and know that God has been moving all along,
that's right.
You can start to piece that together. Another thing I thought was interesting while you were talking at the very beginning, you were talking about his parents, and of course it doesn't, you know, the story is obviously about John,
mm-hmm.
but you started describing sort of them telling him, sort of raising him on this hey, we had this experience. We know this is the course of your life. And what a, like that essentially was their calling.
It was.
Really. Just sort of prepare the way for the guy that was going to prepare the way.
Almost. That's right. That's
right. Right. And of course, you know, John, it became this amazing guy, but just like any person that's ever gone before us, you know, the parents, I'm sure, played a major role.
That's right.
Not just in giving him life, like being born, but raising him in the environment and with the words and the encouragement and the lessons that would help to shape him into the person he became.
That's right.
You know, so they don't talk about them having a calling, but that essentially is theirs.
And interestingly, and I think maybe a little bit of an aside, but an important note to make here is Zechariah and Elizabeth were 100% sure of John's calling.
Right.
That is different than a parent who insists that their kid is going to be a Major League Baseball star.
Yes. Yes.
Or imposes their own failure and ensures that their kid's going to be successful where they fell short. That's about the parent.
Right.
And there are lots of parents that do that. And I think it's important that we as parents are committed to helping our kids discover their calling.
Right.
But not trying to hijack their calling.
Right. And, well, because when you have, I mean, if you put yourself in their shoes, I mean, they had a literal divine encounter.
Yeah.
For this, which, you know, the parent that's trying to get their kid on a D1 baseball team probably has not had a divine encounter about that. And yet they still sort of maybe want to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas just, you know, just the observation of the humility it takes, as every parent wants their kid to be the guy or be
right.
the girl, right? To,
sure.
To go out and achieve all their dreams or whatever. But their message to him essentially was like, hey, you're never going to be the guy.
That's right.
Basically.
That's right. And actually, if I'd like to dial into one of the things you said, since we're leaning in a little bit on parenting here. You said every parent, you know, wants to, excuse me, help their kids, you know, achieve their dreams or, you know, whatever. But I if I could be so bold, and this will rub some people the wrong way, that's never been my dream as a parent. Mm. I don't want my kids to live their dream. I want my kids to live God's dream for them.
Right.
I mean that with everything I've got. I don't want my kids to get what they want. I want my kids to get what God wants for them.
Right.
And I think that is a significant, it's not just semantics. It's not just words. It is a significant mindset shift, because there are a whole lot of people that we know out there who are wealthy and miserable and who have, you know, all the stuff or they've found some success in their career or name your thing. They got the boat. They got the – and they never – and they still have this massive void in their lives, and it's because they pursued their dream instead of what God wanted for them. At the end of the day, we're all going to exit the way we came.
Yep.
And the question is, what did we really leave behind?
Mm.
And I want my kids to know that when their dad is gone, that their dad left the legacy, the exact legacy God wanted him to leave. And I want that for them too.
Yeah.
And I think it's a huge mistake for parenting. In this case, what you got is Zechariah and Elizabeth, who have some recognition, not only that their kid is going to play second fiddle, but that in the process, he's going to live a hard life. And I don't know if they know the way his life's going to end.
Right.
But you mentioned earlier, you used the word, you know, his life ended tragically. I think from a human perspective, you and I agree on that. I'm not sure John would say his life ended tragically.
Yeah, probably not.
He was beheaded over his allegiance to Jesus.
Yep.
And
he was going to take that wherever it led.
He was going to take that wherever it led. And I want to be like that.
Oh, yeah. It's very, very rare to find a person in the Bible that it feels like no matter what you read about them, they sort of always did the thing they were supposed to do in that moment.
Yep. Yep.
And of course, John was a human. So, but scripture paints such a great picture of him.
Yeah.
And definitely worth a lot of studying.
And lived into his calling. And you're right. He was a human. We can be sure that there were some times where he, you know, but there are other, you know, Peter, we can see all kinds of his flaws. Paul, Moses. We know he was a terrible guy. I might be wrong about this. You can correct me but I can't think of any recorded time in scripture where we are revealed to his flaw or sin.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think we ever see it. I don't think there is either.
Yeah.
And we know it exists.
Sure.
But what we can be sure of is that John lived his calling and completed it well. And so the famous text from the Bible, you know, well done, my good and faithful servant. Those are the words I hope to hear. And those are the words I'm sure that John heard. And it is because my good and faithful servant comes out of you did what I wanted you to do, i.e. you fulfilled your calling. And you can't fulfill a calling you don't discover, and you can't discover a calling you don't pursue. That's what John did. That's what you and I should do too.
Absolutely. We could talk about John the Baptist for a while.
Yep.
But I think we'll end it there.
Yep.
Because I think that's a really powerful thing for us to remember and to take with us. If you want to hear any more about what Angie said, you can go on our website, passioncommunity.com, and you can search our message archive. She talks, like Brian said, about John preparing the way, sort of once he had discovered and leaned into that calling, what that looked like and how it can impact us. But of course, the lesson from today for us in this podcast is just being able to find those markers in your past, examine where God has brought you, and I think it'll help bring some actual clarity. Because I know a lot of people listening to this, a lot of people we interact with all the time here at PCC, feel like they are waiting for that sort of magical divine moment where their calling will be revealed, mm-hmm. right? Or that they need to have their own parting of the Red Sea moment or burning bush to feel like God speak to them. But maybe God has been speaking to you mm-hmm. through your circumstance. Mm-hmm. And if you'll just do the hard work of examining where that is, it'll provide some clarity. So thanks
yep.
for your insight. Thanks for leading us through a little bit about John the Baptist. We hope that you'll join us next time. We're going to continue, and we're going to talk about, I think I'll wait. I think you'll just have to come back. I think you'll just have to come back and hear who we're going to talk about next. But really looking forward to it. Thank you for your time. We'll see you soon.